All right, everyone, get ready for today's deep dive. We're going to be tackling First Amendment rights, specifically the landmark case of Cox v. New Hampshire.
Oh, this is a good one.
It is, isn't it? Imagine, like, just picture a world where anybody could just hold a parade.
Anytime.
Anytime, anywhere.
Anywhere.
Sounds fun, right?
It does.
But then also kind of chaotic.
Yeah, total chaos. Right.
And that's what this case, Cox v. New Hampshire, is all about, like walking that tightrope. Balancing free speech with, you know, just keeping the peace.
Yeah, and Cox v. New Hampshire really gets at this, I guess, inherent tension, right, between individual liberties and having a society that actually functions. Yeah. It's not just about parades, though. It really sets a precedent for how local governments can manage all their public spaces, you know,
yeah,
while still upholding our constitutional rights.
Right, so think protests, marches, even like those big farmers markets.
Yeah, exactly. Cox v. New Hampshire has a hand in how all of those things are regulated.
Yeah, and it all started back in 1939.
Way back.
In Manchester, New Hampshire. And we had this group of over 60 Jehovah's Witnesses, and they decided to hold what they called an information march.
Okay.
So you got a picture, like, downtown, busy, bustling area, and all of a sudden you've got all these lines of people organized, marching on the sidewalks.
Wow.
Holding signs and handing out leaflets.
So what got them in trouble, or I guess what sparked the whole legal battle, was a New Hampshire law that said you had to have a permit for any parade or procession on public streets.
Oh, interesting.
And this is key, right? It wasn't about what they were saying, what the marchers were saying.
Right.
It was about how they were using that public space.
I see.
So that's where the issue comes in, right? Did the government go too far, you know, by demanding a permit for this? Or were they just doing their job, like keeping things orderly?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. So, I mean, where did the Jehovah's Witnesses come in with their side of it?
Well, their argument was basically, hey, we weren't being disruptive. We were peaceful. We were in single file.
Right.
We're just exercising our First Amendment rights. You know, free speech, assembly, religious freedom.
Right.
For us, they said, this march, this is a form of worship. This is public education.
Yeah.
So their argument brings up this huge question, and it's still relevant today, you know. How far do our First Amendment rights actually go in a public space?
Mm-hmm.
Can the government tell us how we can and cannot exercise those rights?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not a simple answer, is it?
No, no, not at all. And that's why this whole thing, this local dispute over a permit, ended up going all the way to the top, the Supreme Court.
Wow, the Supreme Court, from like a little permit dispute.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty wild. It shows you how important these questions are, right?
So what happened? Did the court, did they side with the Jehovah's Witnesses and say, yeah, you have the right to unrestricted expression in public?
Well, you might be surprised by what happened.
Okay.
The Supreme Court, all nine justices, they agreed. They upheld the New Hampshire law.
Wow. Okay. So they were saying the government can, in fact, regulate even parades and marches, even if they are a form of expression.
That's right.
Wait, so hold on a minute. Even though the Jehovah's Witnesses march, they were peaceful, everything was orderly, they still got in trouble because they didn't have that permit.
I mean, doesn't that seem to go against the whole idea of free speech?
Okay, so it's not as black and white as it might seem.
Yeah.
What the court really focused on was the difference between, like, controlling what someone is saying, like the actual content of their message, and controlling when, where, and how they're expressing it.
Okay, so the time, place, and manner.
Exactly. It's like they weren't saying, hey, Jehovah's Witnesses, you can't share your views.
Right.
They were saying the government can set some reasonable limits on when, where, and how you do it.
So it's kind of like, you can have your parade, but...
but do it in a way that doesn't mess things up for everyone else.
Right. Don't disrupt public order.
Exactly. And don't infringe on other people's rights. Okay, yeah. But doesn't that give the government a lot of power? Like, couldn't they, I don't know, abuse that power and silence groups they don't agree with?
Yeah.
Just under the guise of, you know, public order or whatever?
That's a valid concern, for sure. And the court, they were aware of that. They specifically addressed that. They said, look, this whole permitting thing, it can't be used to discriminate against anybody.
Okay.
It can't be used for censorship.
Right.
The law, they said, has to apply to everybody the same way, no matter what they're saying.
So they were really careful to make that distinction, like, it's about logistics, not controlling the message.
Exactly.
Okay, so it can't be like, oh, we don't like your message, so no permit for you. But like, How do you actually prevent that from happening? How do you make sure the system is really fair, you know?
Well, the court had some thoughts on that, too. They said any fees that go along with these permits, they got to be reasonable.
Okay.
And they have to be directly tied to just the administrative costs, you know?
Right. So, like, covering the costs of processing the application, stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, processing the paperwork, making sure there's enough security, not like a crazy fee that makes it impossible for some groups to even have a parade or protest.
Right, like a speech tax to shut people up.
Right. The court was basically saying, we're not going to let the government use money to silence people.
That's interesting. So they drew a line there.
Yeah. It's about making sure that everyone can exercise their right to assemble, to speak their minds, not just the people who can afford it. And Cox v. New Hampshire, it laid down that framework, how governments can regulate this stuff without actually silencing dissent or, you know, playing favorites.
So this case, this whole thing that started with these Jehovah's Witnesses way back when, it's had a lasting impact on how cities and towns all over the country handle protests, marches, even those big community festivals everyone loves.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Right.
Cox v. New Hampshire, it's a cornerstone of First Amendment law still being cited today. It reminds us that, look, our rights, they're not absolute. They exist within a framework, you know? It's about balancing individual liberties with the needs of society as a whole.
Yeah, for sure. It's a delicate balance. Yep. I'm kind of curious, this time, place, and manner thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems pretty simple on the surface, but I bet there are tons of gray areas when you actually try to apply it.
Oh, you're totally right. Figuring out if a regulation is really neutral or if it's just a sneaky way to censor someone, that can be tricky.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Like, imagine a city that said, okay, no parades on the weekends.
Okay.
On the surface, it might seem like, oh, they're just trying to keep things from getting too crazy on busy days.
Right, but weekends are when people are actually free to participate in those things.
Exactly. So that kind of rule, it could actually prevent a lot of people from getting their voices heard, even if it wasn't specifically targeting a certain group, you know?
So good intentions, but bad results.
Exactly. They might just be trying to keep traffic flowing, but the impact could be huge. It could really step on people's First Amendment rights. And that's where the courts have to step in and really examine those regulations.
Right. They have to make sure those rules are really fair.
Yeah.
And not just a sneaky way to silence certain groups.
Exactly. And this is where all those legal precedents come in. Cases like Cox v. New Hampshire, they give the courts a guide, a way to decide if a rule is really just about time, place, and manner, or if it's crossing that line into censorship.
So it's not just a simple checklist. The courts really have to dig deep, look at the whole picture.
They do. They have to look at the impact. They have to think about, okay, what's the real goal here?
Right. Are we managing logistics or are we trying to control the message?
That's it.
Sounds like Cox v. New Hampshire, even though it was decided ages ago, it's still really relevant today.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a reminder that, look, this conversation about free speech, it's ongoing. We've got new situations popping up all the time, new technologies, and the courts are always being asked to figure out how these old principles apply in these new situations. It's fascinating, really.
So their beliefs, you know, their practices, which were kind of central to their expression, were probably seen as suspicious by some folks back then. Especially with everything else going on in the world. I mean, do you think that had any influence on how their case was handled?
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, legal decisions, they don't happen in a vacuum, right? They're definitely influenced by the social and political stuff going on at the time. Even if it's indirect, it's always there. I mean, 1939, world's about to explode into war, people are on edge, and the Jehovah's Witnesses with their pacifism and their door-to-door preaching, well, they were seen as different, for sure. Sometimes even as a threat.
So it's possible then that the climate at the time, it affected how the court saw their case.
Yeah, definitely possible. You know, the court's decision, they were focused on the legal stuff, the First Amendment, the government's power to regulate. But we got to remember, those decisions, they're made by real people living in the real world with all its complexities.
Yeah, that makes sense. The law is never just about the law, is it? It's about people, history, all of it.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to understand the context of a case, like to really get its full significance. With Cox v. New Hampshire, it helps us understand like the bigger challenges that groups face when their beliefs and practices are different from the mainstream, especially when those beliefs are tied up with their right to free speech and assembly.
Yeah, it's a reminder that protecting civil liberties, it's not always easy, especially for those who are marginalized or seen as outsiders. But I want to shift gears a bit here. What about the long-term impact of this case, legally speaking?
Yeah.
Did it lead to other important legal developments or other cases that kind of built on or challenged the time, place, and manner idea?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Cox v. New Hampshire, it was a landmark case, and it definitely set the stage for some major legal battles about free speech in public spaces. One that comes to mind is Ward v. Rock against Racism. That was back in 1989, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court, too. It involved noise regulations for concerts in Central Park in New York City.
Oh, wow. That sounds interesting. Like rock concerts and the First Amendment. That's a cool mix.
Yeah.
What was the issue there?
Well, the city, they put in these rules, these noise regulations, that basically forced bands playing in the park to use sound equipment and technicians provided by the city.
Okay.
Their reasoning was like, hey, we got to prevent excessive noise, keep the peace for the park goers and the people living nearby.
It makes sense, I guess. So another balancing act, right? Free expression versus like the right to enjoy a peaceful park.
You got it. But of course, the bands and their fans, they saw it differently. They felt like those rules were stepping on their First Amendment rights, like a form of censorship, trying to control what kind of music they could play.
Right. So back to the Supreme Court they go.
Yep. All the way to the top.
So what happened? Who did the court side with? The city or the rock bands?
Well, they ended up upholding New York City's noise regulations.
Oh, interesting.
And their decision, it built upon the principles from Cox v. New Hampshire. They basically said, look, even though amplified music, it's a form of expression, the government's allowed to step in and set some limits. They can regulate the volume, how it's done, to prevent it from becoming, you know, a nuisance or infringing on other people's right to peace and quiet.
So it's like you can rock out, but not so loud that it shakes the windows of the whole neighborhood.
Pretty much. And the court was really careful to point out that the regulations were content neutral. They didn't target specific types of music or messages. It was all about the time, place, and manner of the expression.
The volume, basically.
Exactly. Not about the music itself.
So Ward v. Rock against racism, it basically took Cox v. New Hampshire and showed how those same principles could be used in a whole different context. Mm-hmm. And that really solidified the whole time, place, and manner idea as a key part of First Amendment law.
It definitely did. It's a perfect example of how legal precedent, you know, how those earlier decisions, they shape how later cases are decided.
Right, like building blocks.
Yeah, exactly.
And it shows, too, how the courts have this really important job. They got to protect our First Amendment rights.
Yes.
But also recognize that there have to be some limits, right, to protect other interests, too. And that balance, it's always being tested, especially as we get new technologies and new challenges to free speech.
Absolutely, yeah. Think about the internet, social media, all that. Brand new ways for people to express themselves.
Right.
But it also creates new challenges, right? How do you regulate speech online? What are the boundaries of free speech in this whole digital age? Those older cases like Cox and Ward, they give us some good guidelines, but the conversation's definitely not over.
That's such a good point. The law is always evolving, always adapting to new situations. It's not just the dusty old book of rules. It's a living, breathing process.
That's a great way to put it. It's a constant dialogue, you know, about how we can balance individual rights with what's best for society as a whole.
Right. And these cases, they might seem like they're just about little things like parade permits or noise levels, but they touch on these huge fundamental questions about freedom, about order, even about what it means to live in a democracy.
Couldn't agree more.
This whole deep dive has been so eye-opening. I feel like I have a much better grasp now of how Cox v. New Hampshire shaped our understanding of First Amendment rights, and not just about parades, but in all sorts of different situations.
It's been a pleasure discussing this case with you. I hope our listeners are feeling inspired to learn more about the First Amendment and how it's still so relevant today.
Absolutely. And on that note, we'll wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. Thanks for joining us, everyone, and we'll catch you next time for another exciting exploration of the law.